Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thanks everybody for tuning in again to Global from Asia. So before we get started, there'll be a couple of fun updates on my personal life that I thought I'd keep you updated. I just picked up my family-in-law from the airport last week, and they've moved in with me and my wife, and they help out with the housework and the baby on the way. So definitely become more and more local Chinese, and getting lots of looks from local neighbors on our evening walks. Also, in kind of connection with that, I've moved out of my home office, and we have now a kind of like shared workspace across the way in the next building over, and a few of us have been working there and is staring right at the Hong Kong border. Pretty good view, and pretty excited that be able to work with some of my friends and get some work done and separate my work life and my personal life. So today's show, we're lucky enough to have Jeremy Hanks on the show, and he's co-founder of Doba.com dropship platform, and he's currently now focused on a new venture called dropship.com commerce software. So he's been visiting Hong Kong and China a few times now. I met him a few years ago while he was up in Dongguan and Guangzhou. We met in Hong Kong this time and only a few days here in town. So we're really lucky got him on the show today. He's just kind of given us some perspective about e-commerce and America trends that he sees and how maybe Asia-based companies can more get involved. So let's get started. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. We're here in Hong Kong at the Holly Brown Cafe, and I have my friend Jeremy Hanks with us. Thanks for being here, Jeremy.
Yeah, good to be here.
So do you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, so I am an entrepreneur. I'm currently working on my third startup. I'm based in Salt Lake City, Utah. This is my third trip to China and or Hong Kong. And my companies for the last 15 years have been involved with inventory distortion. And ultimately, you know, that turned into kind of first worked on closeout inventory and closeout problems, and then that turned into a company that focused on drop shipping as a service. And now my current company is working on supply chain integration software for drop shipping and supply chain integrations.
Awesome. I know a lot of our listeners do e-commerce and online businesses, so really glad to have you here. So yeah, as you just said, it's your third time over here in China, Hong Kong, or Asia. Well, maybe you've been to India too, we mentioned in calls before, but so what brings you back here this time?
So a couple of things. I just had a few people that I wanted to catch up with and meet. And a friend of mine relocated to Hong Kong from Utah and wanted some help with a group that we started in Utah called LaunchUp.org, which is these events for entrepreneurs, and wanted to think about maybe getting something like that started here in Hong Kong. And so he gave me a reason to come. And so I came for a week to kind of be back. It's been 3 years since I was over here last. So
that was the last time we had met too. Yeah. So I think everybody thinks about China and they think about, you know, factories and manufacturing. I think now it's more like branding and sales and distribution too, right? So I think that's another good position for you to be in. Is that what you're noticing too? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I you know, like I was mentioning to you earlier, that there's seems to be this progression. You know, there's most of China and sourcing out of China has been from the standpoint of just the ability to create a product less expensively for somebody else. So I think the first step is, you know, that's been the majority of it for so long. And then it seems like a lot of manufacturers now realize that they can hire people and work with people that can help figure out what to create through the design process. So that first step is like, hey, now I can help other people design products. It still maybe has somebody else's name on it, but I can put more of that, you know, identification creation on my, you know, I'm not just a manufacturer for hire. I'm a manufacturer and creator of products for hire. And then, you know, quickly, once you've done that, then it's a very, very close next step to say, maybe I could create my own brand because now I can, you know, I can create products. I can make these products. Now, how do I do that? And the minute that you do that, you now are starting to think about the consumer. Whereas before it was all more B2B, you know, more predictive, like, you know, just predicting the future, you know, helping other people predict the future. So that third step is like, maybe I do a brand. Do I do that, you know, here in Asia, do I, you know, in China? I think most of them start with that. But then it's a slippery slope, which is probably not a bad slope, but it's like, if I can figure out how to sell to the consumer in China or in Asia, maybe I should look at the markets of Europe or of the US and you know, with my brand or even a different brand. So it seems like there's this progression, and the most disruptive and kind of cutting edge manufacturers and suppliers you know, seem to be leading that charge. I think the numbers are still probably small as percentages. Most people are still probably stuck at step one, but I think these are the kind of things that could tip pretty quickly and change the landscape, I guess, if you will.
Great. And I think, you know, I think with B2C from Asia, I think the biggest hurdle is the logistics, right? So I know is this mostly shipping from the US that you see, or shipping from Asia directly?
We see some of both. I think it really comes down to, you know, size and then price points of products. At the right intersections, we do see a lot of just shipping from Asia. I mean, you in essence, you're kind of individually shipping an order from here to somewhere else in the world. The other thing that's happened, though, is there's been a crop of companies. Some of them are the old companies just doing more things. You know, the old 3PLs and freight forwarders, and those are the world of just maturing, driven a lot by e-commerce because it's so focused on kind of onesie, twosie type, you know, fulfillment. And then other companies like Shipwire and others that are focused on type e-commerce type fulfillment. Those companies have, you know, really made some strides on the logistics side of it and figuring out how to put products in places that are closer to that end customer point. So it's both. I think there is some of that direct fulfillment from, you know, from wherever the product is created. But the world and companies and services have gotten smarter about kind of pre-positioning those products closer to the consumer. So there, you know, there's a few companies we've seen that when they decide to like tackle the US market, for instance, you know, they just move product there. And then if it's e-commerce, or even if they're still working with dealers, but if it's mostly e-commerce type focused, either themselves or with other people, that they're not having to deal with, you know, overseas logistics.
So for your business, dropship e-commerce or dropship commerce, do you work with like non-US based? Is it with the software development, or where are most of your clients from?
Yeah, the majority of our customers, they're either retail establishments. Some of them are online retailers. A lot of them are chain store retailers, and they are looking to expand their product assortment. You know, this idea of an endless aisle and to work with other distributed product sources, whether they're vendors or even other retailers, and they need to connect to all of those different companies for, you know, to get catalog, you know, information, inventory visibility, and to exchange orders. We also work with some suppliers who have kind of the inverse problem. They're trying to penetrate their channels completely. And so they're trying to, you know, push more products virtually into these different demand channels, especially the e-commerce channel, with less restrictions. So we're mostly US focused right now, just because, you know, we have to kind of start somewhere and make sure the technology gets built. We just signed up our first Australian customer. You know, we have some other customers around the world that work, and we have a customer based out of Germany, one of the largest catalog e-commerce companies that's in Germany, and they have operations all over the world. But we like to look at over, you know, in Asia, because, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of it's just supply demand, and how effectively can you match that with the least amount of inventory distortion possible. And so, you know, we kind of have a belief. I have a belief that the closer you can get to the supply, you know, the better things are. And that's why I think it's exciting to see some of these trends where there's this evolution of companies shifting and kind of hybridizing the traditional roles and doing more and more things and becoming more effective at creating a product, you know, to the, you know, on the one side, creating, you know, the supply, and then on the other side, it's the consumption of the demand. And it's how fast can you, you know, and lean and nimble can you make that? E-commerce seems to be the driver of breaking the old way and enabling new ways.
So I think me and a lot of other listeners are like Westerners that like live in Asia or Hong Kong, and they set up Hong Kong Limiteds or Chinese companies, or maybe they're in Thailand, Philippines. Sometimes the biggest hurdle for them is they still have like a US company, but they also have like a Hong Kong company, and they're always struggling to try to manage cash flow and centralizing around Hong Kong. So we've had other episodes where we talked about merchant accounts offshore, like through Hong Kong. There's limited, like, of course, America still has the most options and most ease of doing business. But, you know, I don't know if, I know you're not so familiar in Asia, but what are your thoughts on the trends, like, you know, global companies being able to like accept Visa, MasterCard, and shipping, you know, shipping around the world, just kind of like a high-level idea from your experience.
Yeah, no, I have not a ton of experience with that, but, you know, in my second company, Doba, we spent a lot of time looking at international expansion, both here in Asia, but also into Europe through the UK and things. And one of the things that I came away from that experience with is kind of the understanding, at least the way I look at it, is whether you're going to succeed or not, you have to be fighting a big enough problem that it's just going to work. So the difference of, you know, whether you're a Singapore-based company or Hong Kong, and then how that affects your ability to accept payments or, you know, taxes and all those, those are tweaking of the knobs on the machine, but the machine has to be big and real, you know? So I think that they're important things to think through, but I would wonder if maybe too many entrepreneurs worry so much about that, they don't ever find a big enough problem to go solve. You know, those are good things to have, you know, and to do a little bit of thought on, but, you know, pick something and just go and actually start doing things. If there's a road that maybe is slightly incrementally better down the road for payments or something, that, you know, you can do that. And the other thing I'll say on that is the world changes a lot. You know, even in the US, you know, our payments industry is about to be disrupted in a lot of big ways. Yeah. Even the old way, you know, there's this, you know, I worked at a company called AuthorizedNet for several years, a long time ago. And, you know, there are companies like Stripe and Square and others that are really doing some innovative things, but that innovation is still based on the old payment systems, you know, the old big gateways and, you know, interchanges and things. There's a whole other world of payments maybe coming. I don't know if it's things like, you know, Bitcoin and, you know, different things like that. But so as an entrepreneur, you don't know where that's going to go. And I do see a lot of times people focus so much on that, they don't ever get from point A to point B. You know, moving from point A to point B, it doesn't matter where you're located or where you set your company up. It's got to be a big enough problem. If it's a big enough problem, all that stuff falls into place later.
I definitely learned that when I, at first selling my first product, I think some listeners know I was doing the bar supplies, and it was a little bit of a smaller niche market. And I know there's a lot of these blogs talking about niche businesses, and but I think I still would advise to go after a big, like Jeremy says, a big enough market, a big enough problem. I think a lot of times people are focusing on a very small niche market, and then maybe then try to like figure out about taxes, whereas I think maybe think about a bigger business, bigger problem. So I think a lot of our listeners are, you know, have an online business or thinking about kind of growing an online business. And I think a lot of them are messaging me about, you know, if I have products in China, they always look for third-party fulfillment. We're going to do shows on third-party fulfillment from Hong Kong soon. Still doing a lot of research on that personally. But these small sellers, we were talking just now about big problems, but they always don't know. I think the biggest question is, what product do I sell? I just talked to somebody yesterday about that. I know you must have get that common question too. What do you kind of advise there?
Yeah, that is one. We actually get that less now because we're just building software, especially at Doba, where we were that product broker in between, you know, these online sellers on one side and, you know, hundreds of manufacturers and distributors and a couple million products on the other. We always got that question. I think one thing that I would say on that is just with the web, one of the major trends is the virtualization of the world. You see that like with music, it's, you know, books, and it's becoming more virtual, like, period. It's created with, you know, it's typed into a word processor. You read it on a Kindle. It's just virtual, you know. Other products can't be virtual because they're real, you know, they're, you know, you can touch them, feel them. And so, but virtualization, to the extent that it pushes to virtualization, all products can become commodities in essence. Like if you know, channels and the different barriers start to kind of all blur together. So the thing I'll say there is, I think long-term, the selling other people's products has some headwinds against it, because more and more, you know, there's some point everybody might be able to sell all the same things. You know, like I just mentioned before, you have product selection on one side, you have product penetration on the other side, two sides of this coin between supply and demand. And historically, there's been a lot of barriers. Geography was a big one, you know, with physical retail stores, all these things. That's all that's born together. So, you know, and then you add on top of it something like a marketplace, you know, like an Amazon in the US or eBay or, you know, or Alibaba or Taobao and things like that, right? So you add those in and you know, you run into a really big challenge. Like, think about, like, you've got this red pen here, right? Like, how many people need to be selling that on Amazon Marketplace to penetrate the market? And if you have an inexhaustible supply of red pens, you know, there's no supply constraint, you could really argue that there should only be one seller of that pen. You know, at the right price, you'll maximize the supply demand where those two lines intersect, you know? And so, you know, back to just economic theory. So that's just something to think about is, you know, if you're looking for a red pen, there's a lot of other people looking for that too. And then you run into this potential race to the bottom of competition. So, and then how do you win? I don't know. So maybe, you know, I like to encourage people, if they have the ability to think about maybe they should go create a green pen, you know, like really, I think some of the best opportunities and what I see in the US is some of the best e-commerce opportunities are people who are creating brands. They're niche brands, but they're kind of vertically integrated. They're owning their own products. They may use something like drop shipping to test markets and to understand the demand side and to learn from it. But a lot of times, you know, they kind of turn into like, you know, their core is they've created their own products. And then they may surround that with other people's products or with virtual products and drop shipping. But I think that's something to think about is where, you know, where could you create something that fills an unmet need versus just finding somebody else's stuff to go sell? Because that gets really competitive really fast.
Yeah, I remember when I first started selling online, eBay was the main marketplace and you could use your own website. And Amazon, I think, still wasn't open. Now, I have to say, I'm not a big fan of Amazon. I mean, I guess it's really great for the consumer, but it kind of commoditizes the seller. It's just, you're just a number on a SKU, a price on a SKU. I know some people doing really great with Amazon, making a lot of money. Personally, I know a lot. But it takes the fun out of it for me, at least as a seller. Because on eBay, I used to have my own template design and I could differentiate my product listing. But with Amazon, it really kind of commoditizes. And I think they're really dominating the market now. So it's really great advice. Maybe a little bit more about your business. Some of our listeners might be curious. How can they get involved if they're interested or you know, learn more?
Yeah, so again, we work on supply chain integration software. If you're going to have a virtual kind of distributed supply chain, you know, you run into this integration problem where you've got to have catalog data, inventory visibility, and order exchanges with a whole bunch of trading partners. You know, you either have green pens and you need to push that out to a lot of other places, or you're looking for green pens, you know, as part of like an endless aisle distributed inventory strategy. So we just try to build technology to help those back office integrations be easier. So that's what we do. And if anybody's interested in learning more, you know, I'm just jeremy@dropship.com and I'm happy to try to, you know, answer some questions, point people in the right direction. I'm a big fan of a rising tide lifts all ships, you know, philosophy, and e-commerce is, I truly think, you know, we're 20 years or so into e-commerce. And, you know, the next 20 years will be, you know, an order of magnitude more disruptive than the previous 20 years because there's so many fundamental things that are kind of falling into place. Search was a huge thing, mobile, social, these big structural changes to the world, to how consumers operate and think. Those things are now in place so that you can start to think more into the supply chain. I think supply chain strategies disruption is a big opportunity in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And I think it's going to make the previous years look like it was just a little bump in the road compared to a much bigger bump in the road that's on its way.
Yes, it got me really excited. And thanks for your time today. And that's a wrap, guys. Catch you next time. Okay, thanks for that, Jeremy. You're definitely a great business person, and I'm glad we got you on the show while you were here in Hong Kong. So as you could hear from Jeremy speaking at the end, you know, he is trying to kind of get his mind around this whole global e-commerce. You know, I think it's definitely a trend of how, you know, America, of course, is a leader, but, you know, now it's becoming a little bit more, the world is flat and people can do business from anywhere. And, you know, how is that going to affect e-commerce with merchant accounts and, you know, logistics and shipping and warehousing? So it's, you know, it's pretty complex and still very difficult. But, you know, I think like a lot of listeners here today, by getting in early and learning the ropes at the beginning of this phase, we can get a definitely good advantage. So hopefully we keep improving and making things more clear. Also, it's been a lot of fun. A lot of different podcast listeners have been reaching out and I've been kind of catching up with them both in Hong Kong and in Shenzhen. So definitely give me a shout if you're coming down for business or pleasure. I really enjoy meeting or hearing from you guys and, you know, keep it going.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.